The Serious Funny Man. Introduction. Read the assigned section and highlight or underline the interesting information about his life. Be prepared to discuss. The world knows him as Mark Twain, but he was born Samuel Longhorn Clemens. On the night of his birth in 1835, Halley's Comet appeared as a brilliant streak of light in the sky. In 1910, the comet reappeared and Clemens died. Though Halley's Comet comes and goes every 75 years, Mark Twain's brilliance has kept shining steadily to this day. From a little boy who loved to stretch the truth, Sam Clemens grew into the greatest American storyteller of his time. He was a man of many contradictions. He grew up in a slave state. His father owned a slave, and he had slave-owning relatives. But Twain came to see that slavery was wrong and wrote a powerful novel about it. He made fun of the pretensions of the rich, but he did everything he could to get rich. He seethed with anger about all kinds of injustices in the world, but he used humor to call attention to those injustices. He was loved by all for his uproarious humor, but he wanted to be known for his serious works. Read on to find out more about America's beloved and complicated Mark Twain. On the second page, with the photographs and captions, reading the captions from top to bottom, as an older man, Mark Twain liked to read and write in bed. He even gave interviews to reporters from his bed, perhaps with tongue-in-cheek. Twain once wrote, "Have never taken any exercise except sleeping and resting, and never intend to take any. Exercise is loathsome, and it cannot be any benefit when you are tired, and I was always tired." Mark Twain not only spoke out against injustices, but he also took action. For example, he paid the expenses of several African-American college students, quote, as part of their reparation debt due from every white man to every black man. Here he sits on stage listening to Booker T. Washington, who devoted his life to educating African-Americans after slavery ended. Twain was fascinated with the technology of the day. He claimed to be the first author to submit a typewritten manuscript, and his house was among the first to have a telephone installed in Hartford, Connecticut. Twain himself held patents under the name Samuel Clemens on three inventions: an adjustable, detachable strap for vests, pantaloons, or other garments, the first suspenders, a history trivia game, and a self-pasting scrapbook, the only one that earned him any money. 1. A Boy's Paradise. Samuel Clemens was born on November 30, 1835, in the small village of Florida, Missouri. He was tiny and sickly, and his parents wondered if he would live out the night. Fortunately for American readers, he did. When little Sammy was 4, the family moved to Hannibal, the largest town in Missouri, on the banks of the Mississippi River. Hannibal was so full of interesting things to do that Sam later called it a boy's paradise. The first caption reads, despite his frailness, Sam was an active child. He didn't like school rules and was bored by school books. But he did like to read. Robinson Crusoe and Arabian Nights were two of his favorite books. Sam's mother, Jane Lampton Clemens, was of a sunny disposition and delighted in storytelling. Sam inherited her storytelling ability along with her thick red hair. Sam's father, John, was a lawyer and merchant, but he never seemed to make enough money for the family to be free of worry. As Sam remembered it, his father was warm toward his only daughter, but, quote, stern and unsmiling toward his three sons. Every summer, Sam spent a few months on his uncle's farm in Missouri, He and his cousins often visited the cabins where the uncle's 30 slaves lived. Sam was close to Mary Quarles, one of the slaves, seen here later. Another favorite of Sam's was Uncle Dant, a, quote, good friend, ally, and advisor, who taught Sam the spirituals he was fond of, singing all his life. At night, Uncle Dan would tell a ghost story with a surprising ending. Sam liked to play hockey or play hooky from school, especially if he could get a friend to join him to fish or swim in the Mississippi. Sam's mother took to sewing a piece of thread between the two points of his shirt collar so she would know if he had taken off his shirt to go swimming. Sam had a vivid imagination. Quote, I was born excited, he once said. He was always dreaming up adventures for his gang of friends, whether it was playing pirates or robbers or hunting for treasures. A favorite haunt was McDowell's Cave, a miles-long series of passageways and chambers. This cave played an important role in Mark Twain's book, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. The friend Sam admired most was Tom Blankenship, the son of the Iowa drunkard. According to Sam, Tom was, quote, ignorant, unwashed, insufficiently fed, but he had as good a heart as any boy had. He was the only really independent person, boy or man, in the community, and by consequence, he was tranquility and continuously happy and was envied by all the rest of us. Tom Blankenship was the model for Mark Twain's most famous character, Huckleberry Finn. Sam Clemens grew up in a time and place where owning human beings was a fact of life. As a child, he didn't question the practice of slavery. Still, some scenes affected him deeply. At the age of 10, he saw a white overseer throw a piece of iron and kill a slave, quote, for merely doing something awkwardly. And he never forgot the sight of black men and women chained together, walking to be shipped down the river for the slave market in New Orleans. He said, quote, those were the saddest faces I've ever seen. 2. Life on the Mississippi. When Sam Clemens was 11, his father died, leaving the family with no income. Within 3 years, Sam had to leave school. He was apprenticed to a local printer to learn the trade. Sam became an apprentice to the owner of the newspaper, the Hannibal Courier. While learning how to set type, he received no money, but was fed and clothed, although poorly. He later complained that he was given the owner's old clothes. I was only half as big as he was. Consequently, his shirts gave me the uncomfortable sense of living in a circus tent. This is Sam Clemens at age 15. In 1850, Sam got a job at the Hannibal Journal, a newspaper owned by his brother, Orlin. Sam wrote humorous sketches for the paper. One piece made fun of the editor of the rival newspaper, who came after Sam with a gun. Seeing how young Sam was, he pulled Sam's ears instead of shooting him. When Sam was 21, someone told him that the cocoa plant had miraculous powers. Determined to get rich by importing cocoa plants from South America, Sam set off by steamboat from St. Louis to New Orleans. There, he intended to book passage to Brazil, but he never made it to South America. The steamboat journey reminded him of a childhood dream to be a riverboat pilot, the person who steers the ship. He convinced the pilot, Horace Bigsby, to teach him to be a pilot by offering him $500. Check it out. At the age of 17, Sam set off from Hannibal. He spent the next year working in the printing trade as he traveled from place to place. In Philadelphia, he visited the grave of Ben Franklin. What did the two have in common? On the next page. As a con student pilot, Sam had to learn roughly 1,200 miles of the Mississippi River, memorizing every landmark between St. Louis and New Orleans. He had to be able to find safe channels in low water and in high water. River depths were measured by dropping a knotted rope into the water and calling out the results. The knots were 6 feet apart. A cry of "Mark Twain" meant the depth of the water was 2 fathoms or 12 feet, safe water for a riverboat. Sam loved his work. Quote, "A pilot in those days was the only unfettered, unchained, and entirely independent human being that lived on the earth," he later wrote in his book, Life on the Mississippi. In the spring of 1858, Sam got his younger brother, Henry, a job as a clerk on the riverboat Pennsylvania, where Sam was also working. Sam, however, had an argument with the pilot and was ordered off the boat in New Orleans. But the boys agreed to meet at their sister's house in St. Louis. Henry never made it. The boilers on his boat blew up, and Henry's lungs were badly scalded. He died in Memphis a few days after Sam reached his side. When the Civil War started on April 12, 1861, all commercial traffic on the Mississippi stopped. Sam was out of a job. He returned to Hannibal, where some old friends convinced him to join the Confederate Voluntary Militia, a unit called the Marion Rangers. He and 14 others trained in the woods. After 2 weeks of rain and boredom, the group disbanded. "When I retired from the Rebel Army in 61, I knew more about retreating than the man that invented it," he later wrote. That's because the Marion Rangers retreated whenever they heard the Union troops might be coming. 3. Traveling Man. In 1861, after his brief stint as a Confederate irregular, a soldier who was not part of a regular military force, Sam Clemens decided to head west with his brother Orion. Orion, who had campaigned for Abraham Lincoln, had been offered a job as secretary of the new territory of Nevada. Sam stayed out west for 6 years. By the time he returned, he had become Mark Twain, and he had become famous. In March 1864, Mark Twain grew restless again. He left Nevada for San Francisco. For a time, he wrote for a newspaper and one or two literary journals, but the paper fired him after he wrote a story recounting an incident he witnessed during which a Chinese man was chased and stoned by hoodlums while a policeman stood by and did nothing. Penniless and depressed, he traveled north to visit the California gold fields, where he heard a story that would change his life. In the gold fields, Mark Twain heard a story about a man who would bet on anything, including his jumping frog. Twain wrote down the story in his own humorous style and sent it to writer Artemus Ward, who submitted it to a New York literary paper. The story, first called Jim Smiley and His Jumping Frog, and later renamed The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, was soon famous all over the East Coast. Mark Twain wrote to his mother, quote, "I have had a call to literature of a low order, i.e. humorous. It is nothing to be proud of, but it is my strongest suit." In 1866, Twain sailed to Hawaii, quote, actually parentheses, then called the Sandwich Islands, to act as correspondent for the Sacramento Union. He called Hawaii, quote, "the land of happy contentment." Twain toured the island of Oahu on horseback, visited sugar plantations on Maui, and met with King Kamehameha V. He also tried surfing with little success. Many experiences from his time out west and Hawaii appeared in his book, Roughing It. Silver had been discovered in Nevada, so Sam Clemens tried silver mining, but he never struck it rich. To support himself, he took a job as a reporter. When there wasn't enough real news, Sam made up his reporting. It was sometimes a blend of fact and fiction. Sam began to sign his articles Mark Twain, a pen name taken from his days as a riverboat pilot. 3, on page 9. when Twain got back to California, a friend encouraged him to rent a half and lecture about his experiences in Hawaii. Twain was terrified of public speaking, but he did it, and he was a huge success. It was the beginning of a second career for Twain, who turned to lecturing whenever he needed to make money fast. In December 1866, Mark Twain left San Francisco for New York, but he didn't stay there long. As he wrote to his mother, "I am wild with impatience to move, move, move." In June 1867, he left on a 5.5-month cruise to France, Spain, Turkey, and Egypt, among other places. He arranged to be a correspondent for the San Francisco Alta California newspaper, which sponsored his trip. When he got back, he collected his writings in a book called The Innocents Abroad. On his trip, Mark Twain befriended Charles Langdon, a young man from Elmira, New York. Upon their return to the U.S., Charles introduced Twain to his family. Twain liked the Langdons. They were a contrast to his own family, wealthy, affectionate, and anti-slavery, while his own had been poor, reserved, and slave-owning. He fell in love with Olivia Langdon, Charles Langdon's sister. In February 1870, they were married. Mark Twain had decided to settle down. On page 12, for Family and Fame. By the time Mark Twain married, he was well-known and well-off. He and Olivia, or Livy, adored each other. Her nickname for him was Youth. Although their only son died young, they took delight in their three daughters, Susie, Clara, and Jean. But despite a successful writing career that made him world famous, Twain was dogged by financial problems for many years. When those were finally settled, family tragedies marked his later years. In 1871, Mark and Livy moved to Hartford, Connecticut, where they eventually had this elaborate home built. Here, they lived for 17 years, giving lavish parties to entertain the many literary folks who lived in the area. His next-door neighbor, Harriet Beecher Stowe, author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, was a frequent visitor. The Mark Twain House is now a museum. For 20 years, the Twain spent summers near Elmira, New York, at Quarry Farm, the home of Livy's adopted sister, Susan Langdon Crane. The Cranes had a study built for Mark to write in, away from the bustle of family life. Here he began The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. In 1874, typically Twain would throw himself into a book and then put it aside for a period while he worked on something else, or on nothing. Twain believed he could get rich with the invention of an automatic typesetting machine and invested thousands of dollars in it. He kept making, quote, improvements, but it failed a test run and was scrapped. In 1884, Twain decided he could make money by starting a publishing firm. Charles L. Webster & Company was successful for a few years, but eventually it also lost a lot of money. In 1891, to save money, the Twains closed their house in Hartford and moved to Europe. It was the end of the happiest period of Twain's life. Page 13. In the photograph, Mark Twain loved his children and he loved to act. Here, he and Susie act out a charade with Twain wearing a bathing suit, a straw hat, and a hot water bottle around his neck. Clara wrote, quote, "No one could ever be quite so ridiculous as father was." While living in Europe, Twain paid off his debts with income from a worldwide lecture tour and subsequent publication of a book based on those travels. Following the equator, in 1 year, he made 150 appearances on 5 continents. In 1896, while on a visit to the U.S., Susie contracted spinal meningitis and soon died in 1900. The Twains returned to the U.S. to live. Then, in 1903, Livy, who had been frail all her life, sailed to Florence, Italy, for her health. but in 1904 she died there. In October 1909, Clara, who had been pursuing a career as a concert singer, married and moved to Europe. Now only Mark and Jean were at home. But Jean had suffered from epilepsy for many years, and on Christmas Eve, 1909, she drowned in the bath, having become unconscious after a seizure. Earlier that year, Mark Twain had written, quote, "I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It is coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it." He did just that, dying on April 21st, 1910, at 6:22 p.m., as the comet appeared above the horizon. Page 14. The Storyteller's Stories. Mark Twain wrote 25 books and many more shorter works. Many of his writings are still read and treasured today. Though the stories take place in times gone by, the truths behind them are as fresh as tomorrow. Here's a guide to some of Twain's best loved stories. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, 1876. Mark Twain drew heavily on his childhood experiences and used many of his childhood friends as models when he wrote this ever-popular story in one of the most famous scenes in literature. Tom convinces his friends that he is having so much fun whitewashing a fence that they pay him to take over his job. Page 15. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, 1895. In the book, Huck Finn, one of Tom Sawyer's friends, escapes from his abusive father and takes a raft journey down the Mississippi with Jim, who is fleeing slavery. As he comes to know the real Jim, Huck sees beyond the color of Jim's skin to his true value as a human being. Because the book portrays the realities of racism, some people don't want it taught in their schools, but others have argued that Twain's vivid portrayal of racism is a strong condemnation of racism and should be taught. Mark Twain is shown here with John T. Lewis, who is thought to have been one of the models for Jim. The Prince and the Pauper, 1881. In this tale of England in the 1500s, beggar Tom Canty and Edward Tudor, heir to the throne, discover they are lookalikes. While trying on each other's clothes, they are separated. Tom Canty is treated to a life of wealth and ease, while the prince must make his way in the world as a pauper. His travels through his land teach him about the harshness of English laws and the lives of the poor in his realm. Here, Clara Clemens and a friend act out a scene from the book. Life on the Mississippi, 1883. Twain's fond recollections of his days as a riverboat pilot were popular all over the world. Once, when Twain was visiting Germany, a hotel porter invited him to his tiny room, where he had German translations of all of Twain's works. Pointing to the Mississippi book, the porter said, "That one there is the best one you ever wrote." Personal Recollections of Joan of Arc, 1896. Mark Twain thought this serious novel about the peasant girl who led the French army against the English in 1429 was his best book. It was also the favorite of his wife and daughters because they didn't like him to be viewed only as a humorist. Susie wrote that hearing her father read the book aloud was, quote, "an uplifting and revealing hour to us all." Many of Joan's words and sayings are historically correct, and Papa cries when he reads them. A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, 1889. This book shows Twain's mixed feelings about modern technology. Hank Morgan, a factory foreman in 19th century Connecticut, is knocked out and wakes up in King Arthur's England, which he tries to make modern. He teaches the knights to ride bicycles into battle and convinces them to rent out space on their suit of armor to advertisers. In the end, though, Hank uses the weapons of modern warfare to destroy the society instead of improving it. Page 16. Mark Twain's America. During Mark Twain's lifetime, the United States changed dramatically. The West was settled. The country shifted from a farming to a manufacturing economy. Large numbers of people moved from rural to urban areas. Imagination, or immigration, brought increases in population. Here's a brief look at Mark Twain's Changing America. Starting at the top. By 1861, when Abraham Lincoln became president, the issue of slavery had so divided the U.S. that 7 southern states had seceded, withdrawn from the Union, and formed the Confederate States of America. The North fought the South to preserve the Union when the North won the Civil War. 1861 to 1865, the Union was preserved, but bad feelings between the North and the South lasted for decades. Although the Civil War ended slavery in the U.S., it did not end the mistreatment of African Americans in the South. An official policy of segregation forced African Americans to use separate facilities in everything from schools to drinking fountains. In the North, discrimination limited job, education, and housing opportunities. Mark Twain lived during peak immigration years when millions of people from all over the world made the U.S. their new home. They brought new customs, foods, and ideas to the country and added to its diversity. Page 17. The captions of the photos across the top. Phonograph, 1878. Light bulb, 1879. Gas-powered car, 1893. Moving picture camera and projector, 1897. And the airplane, 1903. During Twain's lifetime, new inventions changed people's lives. The telegraph, telephone, and typewriter made communication faster. The elevator meant buildings could be taller, while the light bulb meant they could be brighter. The phonograph, camera, and projector revolutionized entertainment. Airplanes and automobiles took people farther, faster. Between 1835 and 1910, 22 new states were created, many of them in the West. At the same time, however, many Native Americans were pushed off the lands they called home for centuries and were confined to reservations. During the 19th century, many European nations acquired colonies in Africa and Asia and exploited them for their natural resources and cheap labor. The conquering of less powerful nations by more powerful ones for financial gain is called imperialism. Mark Twain criticized imperialism in his writings. In this cartoon, he is seen striking terror in the hearts of U.S. imperialists. During the 19th century, the Industrial Revolution created many new jobs in factories. Since it was more efficient to build factories in cities than in the countryside, people flocked to the cities for jobs. Cities became overpopulated, and poor people lived in crowded and unsanitary conditions. Factory workers, many of them young children, worked long hours under dangerous conditions for little pay. Above, a young girl works in a cotton factory spinning thread. In the late 1800s, industrialists such as John D. Rockefeller and J. Pierpont Morgan made huge amounts of money. They built mansions like Charles Crocker's above and lived extravagantly. In 1873, Twain made fun of the pursuit of wealth at any cost in his book, The Gilded Age. He wrote, "What is the chief end of man? To get rich? In what way? Dishonestly, if we can, honestly, if we must." This period of history came to be called the Gilded Age. At the same time, reformers worked to pass laws that would curb the excesses of the rich and improve the lot of the poor.